Welcome to Next Talk, powered by Compass Group. We're discussing how today's climate will impact the future of on-site food service. Bringing together the most innovative thought leaders, this series will explore how we adapt to the new normal, contribute to a successful outcome, and help lead the industry for the long term. Joining us today on Next Talk is Chris Lapata, client leader with BHDP Architecture, which is a creative firm that places emphasis on innovation, strong client relationships, and reputation for delivering exceptional design-driven experiences. Also with us is Anthony Gargiulo, Envision Group's Senior Vice President of Design Innovation and Space Transformation. It is so great to have you both here.
Laura, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm always excited to be on and really looking forward to today's conversation as we start to dig a little deeper into, you know, the role of the on-site dining and what that starts to look like. Chris, I want to thank you for making the time and joining us today. I know that you and I could probably talk about this for days, but we don't have days. We've got a little bit of time, and I'm looking forward to it. BHDP, which, as you mentioned, is a really well-respected firm, architectural firm around, you know, hospitality, retail, consumer experience. So all things that, you know, I love to dig into and include into our business. So, Chris, really great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Chris, you know, whether it's eating, working, learning, or shopping, everyone wants to know what's next when it comes to on-site dining and the on-site environment. And interestingly, BHDP's approach to identifying solutions has been collaboration. You've created a forum that connects all of your corporate real estate clients in a very focused conversation to mold a measured and actionable response. What can you tell us about these roundtables that you're hosting and any early learnings?
Yeah, thank you, Laura. So while BHDP, we have subject matter experts in various areas like retail and industrial and workplace, our leadership team thought it was really important, along with our strategy and analytics team led by Drew Susco out of our Cincinnati headquarters. We felt it was need to be true to our culture and our design process by giving our clients a voice. The goal was to kind of share and discuss, you know, immediate priorities for them. And those priorities we know can vary from city to city, location to location. And we asked them to kind of weigh the financial urgency against operational risk and to try to figure out if we can come up with some informed decisions related to, you know, population exposure, the timing of the return and the trajectory of the return to the workplace. And, you know, workplace readiness, and can we identify some operating best practices? The exercise led a lot of the people that we spoke to wonder, you know, what is the role of the workplace and what is the role of, you know, food and technology and space and how are we going to look at this thing coming out of this pandemic? So while we've known that the workplace is not the primary driver of corporate productivity, it's still a strong enabler. And now we have this scenario that kind of supports that. Some people called this an experiment. I tend to disagree because experiments are thoughtful. They typically, you know, have an upfront hypothesis and establish measures. In this situation, it was purely a reaction to let's get out of the office. And some reacted better than others, as we know. But we've learned throughout time that the real enablers of human performance are related to, you know, competent management, clarity around goals, connection to purpose, which I think we'll talk a little bit more about today, and well-trained and a healthy workforce. So there's definitely a role for the workplace to play. What we need to really do is define how the workplace contributes to the desired business outcomes and better employee experiences. Because now more than ever, I think there's a need for us to connect with each other, connect to the purpose of an organization. And, you know, we know that that's really where the workplace shines.
Chris, I'm glad you take it there, because we talk a lot about being human, and I don't know if this is an experiment. I agree with you. I think it's more of a test, right? A test of resilience. And I want to come to start with a quote that I pulled out of one of the articles that I think you sent over around the resilient workplace, because I think this is what we're looking at today, right? And so the quote goes as this: you know, as humans, we thrive when we are connected to a mission, to a cause, to a place, and to each other. The workplace matters because it facilitates those connections. As such, the workplace will never go away. It will also never be the same. I think that's really powerful. And I think when you start talking about the human connection, I mean, we continue our journey always thinking human, as simple as that sounds. And it's really nothing new to us. We apply what we call human-centered design to everything we do. And I think, to your point, it now applies more than ever, right? So we start by looking at the end user, putting the end user in the middle of our equation, and then working backwards to an environment and experience that meets their need states. I think the approach will remain the same, but I also think the needs have changed. And I think that what was more social and collaborative pre-COVID has now turned into a focus on safety and personal distance. I think what remains constant in all this is the need for culture and community, which I think is almost the foundation. And what has been heightened is the need for nourishment and convenience in a more safe, sustainable, and no-touch environment. I think these are the true drivers into this new workplace.
Yeah, I agree. And it's making people kind of rethink the whole paradigm, right? They're rethinking the role of space and technology. It's a challenging time for sure.
Well, it's an opportunity too, right? I think we start to look at, okay, so what do these new and improved environments start to look like? What will they focus on? You know, I think it's going to be a whole series of things like new products and new materials and different configurations and how you space plan and more attention to density and proximity and even consider geometry as we start to redefine space to give it different function. I think it's a designer's paradise.
It really is. And how corporations respond to this, because we know everybody's going to respond differently, how corporations respond to this is really going to say something about their corporate culture. We heard one participant talk about the fact that this could transform a company and their culture. It could also derail it, depending on, you know, how they respond to the situation. But I agree with you. There's so many opportunities to rethink and redesign and reimagine.
Can you share any examples of what some of the responses may be, either in the short or the long term?
The responses, not only do they vary within, you know, B&I and corporate, but the B&I and corporate clients have differed drastically from what we were seeing and hearing in higher education. So in our conversations with B&I, it seems as if they're being a little bit more progressive, a little bit more innovative than higher education in their approaches to kind of enabling the workforce to return to the office. But in the same breath, they're not seeking to make really costly, sweeping changes just yet. I think they're in a repurposing mindset. Like, let's look at what we have and how do we use it better. While, you know, a few of our clients are holding off bringing back employees into the office, most of those that we are working with are bringing back a small percentage. We've heard ranges between 20 to 50% of the workforce coming back, and all are obviously following the local government, the CDC, and the World Health Organization recommendations. But, you know, companies realize that if you're going to bring back any number of employee back into your space, you need to be considering nourishment. One of the biggest challenges are these high-rise buildings with elevator traffic, you know, being a primary concern related to social distancing in those elevators. We have a kind of a unique set of challenges. How do you limit that, you know, the elevator traffic? And they've realized that there's a need to kind of bring nourishment to the population. I had a conversation with a real estate executive at one of the largest law firms in the world. And they have a 10,000 square foot restaurant quality cafe in what was a really highly collaborative space in downtown Chicago. These days, that space is empty, and they've had to kind of retool the operation short term to think about smaller offerings, prearranged and prepackaged meals. They really have no plans to change the space because there's a large expense to that, as you can imagine. Others who are in suburban campuses with many buildings are considering the possibility of distributing or decentralizing those food service operations. When we speak to higher ed, I had the opportunity to talk to some of the higher ed professionals in my practice. They've also conducted interviews with college students in a series they called Understanding the Student Experience. And now they've even started to engage high school students because they know that the high school students are their future clients. They're grappling with expectations. They have expectations to where there's not going to be any lining up for food service in the foreseeable future anyway. It's going to be pickup and go or delivery. Students will not expect to have any self-serve choices. In an effort to kind of promote transparency, we think that, you know, fresh preparation with a properly equipped chef will still be desirable if the social distancing and point of purchase bottlenecks can be resolved. Students that we spoke with expect that there's going to be an online or app-based experience like Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks or Chipotle. So getting the technical piece of this right is a primary focus and a challenge for a lot of campuses. If there is table service, students are expecting socially distanced tables with electronic codes so that food is delivered directly to your table. They're all kind of making a push to repurpose space on campus to allow for that social distancing. They're also, you know, challenged with questions like, can larger classes be held in basketball arenas? Can we leverage outdoor spaces for cafes where possible? So all of these considerations are going to impact the design solutions and what those design solutions look like in the future.
Chris, I mean, good news there is we're hearing all the same things. We're doing all the right things. We are solutioning for, I think, just about everything you mentioned and beyond. Journey mapping comes to mind as we talk about the day in the life, but knowing that that day has changed quite a bit. So how do we adapt? How do we flex both our solutions and our space? How do we become more versatile and resilient in our solutions? We don't want to lose our the hospitality part of our business because that's what makes us special.
You're making me think about the market concept that you and your team has introduced and the beauty of that, of being able to flex those services based on the phased population sizes and how those will expand, but then also the pop-up models that'll be able to offer more points of service sprinkled throughout more areas on campus.
Adaptability, flexibility, it's all in that, Laura. I think we need to continue to evolve as the situation evolves, as people start to return, and we need to continue to reinforce that we are taking every step in securing a safe environment and a safe experience.
An interesting comment that I had read in reading through some of the roundtable summary reports was the workplace of the future might look more like a destination for team interactions, a place for on-sites. What can you tell us about this concept of creating a hub for innovation and collaboration, particularly how it relates to food and the cafe space?
Yeah, so great point, Laura. This came up initially in our part one April roundtable. And so in our part two May roundtable, we asked these companies, these participants, to take a deeper dive and partake in some scenario planning exercises. And Anthony, I love what you said about the hospitality piece. I think we want to address that. So we asked them to kind of imagine a time in the not so distant future, maybe about 6 months from now. And imagine what the workplace could be as a culture cafe. Think of it as kind of a highly immersive co-working space, a space that's teeming with activity, a space where employees expend a great deal of energy in larger scale collaboration activities that are going to need nourishment and respite to kind of recharge. So we know, Anthony, that many companies have these huge cafe spaces that prior to the pandemic went largely unused during non-peak dining hours. So we asked them to think, how might a company use this space as a tool to bring people together in that hosted environment to kind of be drenched in the corporate culture, obtain nourishment, access technology that they don't have access to at home? You know, might this sort of place act as a magnet to kind of bring people together? The short to near term objective might be to repurpose, reinvent, or reimagine old space to give new meaning to these outdated, unimaginative spaces. But might these spaces allow an employee to control their own experience, control their own distancing behaviors, and also help to alleviate elements of fear when they do come back? So some participants noted correctly that, you know, the creation of this type of space, this type of physical space, was only a part of the overall story that related to collaborative spaces. The other part is really the behavior change and the employee desires and employee expectations. And this climate, I think, provides a great backdrop for companies to co-create what this future might look like with their employees. Back to your comment about, you know, testing and retesting.
Well, Chris, I actually really like the concept of the culture cafe, and I think you make a lot of valid points, and I think they're all avenues to explore, right? I think the bottom line is we need to activate space differently, both to engage people, but also to drive revenue. But we need to give them control. We need to give them some control over their social distancing, when they're socializing or when they're nourishing. We need to diversify how we connect them to food. I think we talked about that a little bit earlier on the conversation, whether it's through markets, pop-ups or pickup delivery lockers, you name it. But how do we do more, give them more options to connect them to food more conveniently? Social distancing is now an accepted common concept and term in everyday language. So we need to continue to innovate in how we connect people through space and food, as well as design more flexibility into our environment. Right? You talked about, you know, these large dining centers. Well, how do we start to activate space a little differently to drive revenue? How do we look at, you know, repurposing those square feet and reinventing them, reimagining them, but give them more purpose, more function, and do it in a safer way?
Some of the benefits that people made out of, you know, activating these types of spaces, they talked about the, you know, potentially creating a really unique and desirable part of a corporation's real estate portfolio. They felt that this type of space, you know, might aid in supporting cross-functional teams, aid in cross-pollination of ideas, create those chance encounters or unplanned meetings and help to speed up decision-making.
The opportunity of those large spaces, Chris, I think, and we've thrown around a lot about this concept of micro dining, but take some of those big spaces, because you're not going to need all the space and all the seats you had yesterday, at least not for a while. So let's look at that and let's dissect it and say, how do we create these micro dining experiences where you can potentially even reserve your space and then feel safe about the space you've reserved and then have that experience over food with that circle of trust, people in your circle of trust that you are comfortable with. So again, getting very creative with existing infrastructure to create these micro experiences in a different way. And I think there's a lot there to explore that will create a short term, the new norm for today, but maybe start to think about how we design for the future.
Yeah, I agree. And I think those micro cafes, those micro dining experiences could be curated in a way that really makes the employee feel special and really adds to that that work experience if they are going to take the time to come into a corporate setting.
And you talk about having this clean canvas, what if, have they been able to start over? So as an on-site food service provider, Chris, how do you think Compass should shift its mindset and think about things differently when we're on the other side of this?
The real innovation around space and people and food is going to happen in the process of getting to the other side of this. So one of our mutual clients has a really thoughtful mindset. Their mantra is progress over perfection. So let's, start small, let a project or a pilot kind of speak for itself. What did we learn from it? Let's keep testing and iterating. If we think that the workplace populations will flex based on, that culture cafe or these micro cafes or even a clubhouse concept, it might be that the large scale operations, to Anthony's point, need to be scaled down and distributed throughout a college or corporate campus or throughout a high-rise building. Compass teams might work with their clients to also think about the ratio of urban versus suburban versus rural locations of food service, whether it's delivery or even pop-ups. Anthony, I keep thinking back to that pop-up experience you created at the Miami conference several years ago. So, what we keep hearing from clients is we want flexible solutions. And, that type of experience was the definition of, flexible or agile or nimble or whatever you want to call it. But, if a corporate culture will support a more flexible application like that, I think there are so many different ideas to experiment with. There's so many different opportunities.
And so the market cafe that Laura mentioned before, the strategy that presents our business with an opportunity to recognize a new norm for our guests and for our clients. The concept starts to look at, maximizing the food experience, but also minimizing the lines, the crowds, and all those other points of direct personal intersection, right? So that our customers can enjoy a safe and secure culinary experience. An experience, by the way, which we want to deliver in a very frictionless way through technology and support it with convenience in all of these integrated pickup locations. Operationally, this concept also starts to reduce the number of touches, both by streamlining front of house and back of house operations, which again is a positive for us. But I think when we combine that with some optimized menus and some really smart ways to deliver food, it starts to have a real positive impact on the overall experience, and it starts to bring people back together. Ultimately, for me, we have to build with flexibility. We have to ensure that we can adapt to any and every situation. And as we started the conversation, Chris, I think we have to be resilient in how we deliver the what's next.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot of opportunities for great thinking, a lot of opportunities for partnerships as well. I think about what your comment about technology. I think technology is probably one of the best levers that we have to kind of help work through this and create that seamless experience that you're talking about.
I think there's some disruption to be had through partnerships. I totally agree with that. And I continue to be and stay inspired about the opportunities we have in front of us in innovating our future. And I think I started with a quote, Laura. I'd like to end with a quote, and it's a quote from our CEO, and it basically simply states that innovation is a guiding principle for Compass Group's new normal. And I believe that.
Absolutely. And Anthony, you've always remained so incredibly optimistic and positive throughout all of this. And I think that's been really incredibly inspiring. Social distancing, it's just now such a common concept that, words that we hadn't even heard of just a few months ago. But it's fascinating to hear how we're innovating and adapting to provide these solutions that will allow us to continue to connect through space and food and this whole concept of the Culture Cafe is really exciting. We would like to close out each episode with a speed round as a way for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. Anthony, if any of your answers have changed, I hope you will jump in here. But Chris, we will start with you. What are you most excited about doing once social distancing is over?
Wow. Speed round. How do you make up for lost time? So our oldest son and daughter just graduated high school this year. And I'm hoping that we can get them to their respective campuses and to really start to enjoy their college careers as soon as possible.
Is there anything that you've started doing during stay at home that you want to keep going?
I definitely want to help my youngest son with his guitar playing. He just started to pick it up, and I want to help him with that. We've done a lot of cooking, and so I want to keep expanding my cooking skills because I love to eat.
I think this is kind of an expedited version, this enhanced version of innovating for who we are. And it's exciting and also very stressful at times, but very exciting. And I don't think we should lose that as we move forward.
Yeah, a new concept of speed to market, I think, has taken on a whole new definition, right?
New definition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And top choice right now between a puzzle, a podcast, board game, movie, or a good book?
I would have to say books. You know, I try to have two or three different books going at one time, just, and they're all over the place. But I'm getting through them a little bit faster these days. One that I highly recommend, there's a great book I'm in the middle of, called The Book of Beautiful Questions by Warren Berger. It's a very, very fitting for this moment in time. And it's really just about, how can you take a basic question, make it a more beautiful question to hopefully elicit some deeper thinking, some great answers. So highly recommended.
I'll wait for the Book of Beautiful Answers, Chris, so we can get to work. But
I don't know about the beautiful answers, but, you know, there's a lot of questions to be asked right now. But, you know, I think we'll get to the answers. We're going to get there.
Yeah, collectively, I think through these partnerships, we are certainly creating the answers. Well, thank you both so much for your time, and we really do look forward to navigating what's next together.
We want to keep this conversation going. Join us at compassgroup.podbean.com to listen to a new episode every week. If you have questions or a request, send them to envisiongroup@compass-usa.com. Until then, be safe and be well.